My name is Shep Hickey. We're at FabTech 2025 here in Chicago at McCormick Place. I'm sitting here with Evan Uwatake. And Evan, tell me what you do.
Yeah, I'm with Leadline Marketing. Okay. So we're not necessarily in the fabrication business, but we actually work directly with manufacturers and oil and gas companies, financial companies. And typically what we find is there's a very specialized product, a very specialized service that's provided. And in some cases, the marketing doesn't always tell that story well. And so our goal is to help bridge that gap, raise awareness, increase education, and ultimately help them find and get their message in front of the right kind of customers that'll help them grow their business. So what a full service ad agency means, that could be digital marketing, that could be website, it could be creating a new logo, it could be strategy on the front end, identifying your ideal customer profile, and then implementing strategies, campaigns, and tactics to help you grow the business that way. So we want to get an outcome. We market ourselves as a performance marketing company, so we're very outcomes focused. So what we would do is kind of borrow a term from the legal industry. We do a discovery call, sure, which is digging in a little bit deeper, identifying what your goals are, and then we'll back into the strategy, we'll back into the outcomes from there, and then make recommendations for the kind of campaigns that you should do so that you can reach more customers and get in front of the right kinds of people. Because not everybody has like a Super Bowl budget. Right. They can't spend all that money to get in front of everybody, but they do have some sort of budget that they can allocate towards being everywhere that their ideal customer is. And if you can do that with the right marketing tactics, as they are more educated, as they climb that education ladder, they're that much closer to a sale. And so that whole marketing ecosystem, that whole strategy is a big part of what we do. We're at a big trade show, right? So there's a lot of people here that are in a specific industry. They're specialized. The decision makers are here. You can only do that so many times a year. And so digital marketing and everything else can help fill in those gaps. Instead of having those peaks and valleys with your responses, we want to get you a real consistent growth pattern, make it predictable. And once we fine tune it and optimize it throughout the entire campaign, once that campaign ends, hopefully we've earned your business to do another one, and we keep that moving on and build on the learnings that we've gained over those campaigns that we've done, and it just system repeats itself and we get to grow with you. So it's really fun. We get to help engineers and very technical people take their product and convert it into something that a non-technical person can understand. We really want to push on some of those hot buttons, some of the discomfort that a customer may have, and help them say, okay, this product's going to solve my problem. This product's going to save me time. It's going to save me money. And an engineer is going to be really great at telling you the specs and how great it is, but they're not necessarily good at telling you some of the value that it provides.
The emotional side of things.
Exactly. So you want to find that balance, but you need to be able to speak both languages.
Okay, I'll cap it at 1,000 questions.
Okay.
Here. So
this is gonna take a while.
Well, but I think about what you're telling me. I've got a lot of questions about marketing, especially as it pertains to B2B. And then if we drill down, I've come up with a concept, and I'm gonna say I coined it, which is, this isn't B2B. This is what I'm calling eye to eye, industrial to industrial, which I think is a different beast than B2B. It may be a segment, or perhaps its own segment of supply chains, but where I'm going with that is, how'd you get here? Like, where how'd you get to, we want to be in what I'm calling eye to eye, helping these very sort of traditionally sales focused and traditionally product focused businesses pull out, like, what got them to start in the first place?
Yeah.
Like, get that, what's the origin story? Why do these people care? So, but like, how did you get there? I mean, you were a boy at one time and you grew up.
Still a boy. That's still working out for me.
Yeah. And so did you always have in mind marketing? How did we get onto marketing and advertising?
So I think it's more of a finding solutions to problems, being a problem solver, right? That's where you can add value. I started in sales. Sales is just always something that I've done. And then out of college, I got a sales job that I was actually selling marketing. And so the marketing and sales side, I wasn't as passionate about the marketing side, but I was more passionate about, like, when you say eye to eye, I was thinking like relational, right?
Okay.
And it's people, right? So first of all, that's really what's going to be the most important part, specifically with business to business or industry to industry, is having a relational business, because people like to work with people. They like to work with people they know, like, and trust. And so I just kind of had a little bit of a knack for that. But the marketing side of it was cool because it allowed me to be creative. And so creativity has just been a part of what I've done. And sometimes you have to be creative, or a lot of times you have to be creative to solve problems. And so marketing really, really filled that niche. And so I am also somewhat entrepreneurial. I'm not full-blown entrepreneurial. I've figured out that there's definitely some level of risk that I'll take, but there's some entrepreneurs that take big risks, right?
Yes.
Big risks, big rewards, and I'd love to get to that point. I think someday I will. But the whole marketing side of it was coming alongside a business and showing them a way that they can grow and giving them the tools to do it. Because a lot of times they've found a solution to a problem, and it's a problem that they've dealt with. And so they figured out how to solve it, and then now they go, okay, I've solved this problem. There's probably other people that have the same problem. And so now how do we replicate that? And part of it is, it's just like from a channel perspective, from a message perspective, how do we communicate that and efficiently do that? Because especially like with startups or smaller companies, they don't have the ability to spend a lot of money when it comes to that. And so you really gotta be targeted, and you gotta be really resourceful with the marketing ad dollars that they can spend. What got us to here on the FabTech side of it is what's happening is there's an expectation that has shifted. So before, you just had to be in business, right? Had to be in the yellow pages, had to advertise maybe in the newspaper, put a billboard up, be a part of a trade association, do business on a handshake, right? So that's like probably first generation business. Second generation business is that next generation's coming in and they're saying, okay, if I'm gonna do business with this company, they should have a website. And I should see them active on social media. They should be a thought leader. They should be educating me on their products. They should be talking about it. They should be relevant in the industry. Well, that expectation was what got us here to FabTech, because now second and third generation businesses are getting taken over by that next generation. And there's an expectation that you have a website, that you have educational resources, that you have all the tools to explain what it is. They're gonna meet you in person, but they're gonna say, okay, now I'm gonna go do some research on you, and if the research checks out, I'm gonna do business with you. If they go to your website, and your website hasn't been updated since 2009, and it says it's unsecure, and it doesn't work, and there's pictures in there that you can tell were taken, you know, back in the 1950s, well, yeah, it shows that you've had a history, which is important, but that might not directly address the problem that they're trying to solve, and so they're gonna go, okay, yeah, maybe you've done it for a long time, but you're not a relevant business to what I'm trying to do now. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is we want to help fill those gaps. And the other side of it is there are some companies that have marketing departments. Now, it could be a single person. It could be an engineer, a senior engineer who's good at problem solving. And so they've absorbed that role. The challenge with that is I've yet to meet a marketing department that's not overloaded or behind on work. So sure. There's always some sort of thing that they need to address first. So they're triaging. They're attacking whatever thing needs to happen next. So, hey, we got a trade show in 2 months. That date's not moving. We're focused on the trade show. Meanwhile, the sales team's like, our brochures have been out of date for the last 3 years, and it's not really connecting with the audience that we're going after. Or we have new products, and we're not even talking about them yet. And I got a sales number that I got to hit, and I got no tools to go into the marketplace with. And so they're kind of throwing their hands up going, all right, I got to be a squeaky wheel. I got to constantly demand that we get some updated content. So, in those different cases, when we come to a show like this, we're talking to business owners or engineers or marketing people that go, yeah, I need a plug and play marketing department to where I can handle social media. Like we got that unlocked. We're really good at communicating that. But we really need help on SEO. We're not mm-hmm. that like Google changes all the time. The algorithm's always looking for the rightest, fastest answer.
Right.
And so if we can make sure that we stay relevant with that, that's where the performance marketing comes into play, is constantly fine-tuning that to stay relevant within Google. And now, I don't know if you paid attention to it, if you do a Google search, do you know what's at the top of Google? What's the first response?
The AI response.
It's the AI response, right? So now you need to make sure that your website and the content is ranking on the authority score for AI. Because I know a lot of people that actually will go to ChatGPT or Grok to say, tell me everything I need to know about this company.
Sure.
And it'll go search the internet, it'll give you the answer back, and it never touches your website. If you're not in control of that narrative, or if somebody's like, give me the top three companies that I can buy steel from, right? If you're not talking about those things, ChatGPT is not gonna even deliver you as a result. We wanna make sure that you're a part of that, and that's where the AI is gonna start coming into the marketing. So all those different pieces right now, the expectations rising, the more that AI becomes prevalent in everybody's industry, you need to make sure that you're checking all those boxes because what's going to happen is you're going to start to fall further and further down, and they're never going to come across you.
So, well, let me ask you this, which is supply chain dynamics are interesting, like the relationship that exists between buyers and sellers.
Right.
And it's an old relationship, and I don't mean like Old Boys Network. I just mean these are old relationships.
Yeah.
And that dynamic of how a buyer is going to behave.
Yeah.
And how a seller is going to behave, and what I'm seeing right now is that the buyers are increasingly having a voice.
Yeah.
Because of way information is being served up, and that sellers are increasingly have to make sure that they're there. And so when you go to a seller, or maybe when a seller is contracted, say, hey, we feel like we haven't optimized on a marketing or advertising side of things. How willing is that selling company or that distributor to really dig in? And because you're going to say something to them like, wow, you guys, what your value, what you're saying is true, but you're missing like this whole other piece that I think is really going to resonate. And so if you've had this, and that's happy news, when you're in marketing to say, hey, there's this whole other piece we're not even doing yet. Are you finding that distributors or whomever are receptive to this idea of like, well, we've been saying this for a long time, and you're kind of wanting us to either bolt this on with that message or come over to this message? Because there's a risk in doing those, because we've got our steady Freddy business.
Right, yeah.
And you're saying, so what's that reception sort of like once you've done kind of your homework?
Have you ever read the book, Who Moved My Cheese? Are you familiar with that?
No.
It's like a real short book. I can't remember the name of the author, but it's called Who Moved My Cheese? And basically, it's the exact situation you're describing.
Okay.
These mice, humanoid mice, they go to the same spot over and over. There's always cheese there. Well, one day they go to that spot and the cheese not there anymore. And so they start searching around and start trying to figure out where it is, and they completely have to change everything. And eventually they find the cheese again, but they find that the cheese keeps moving. And so that's kind of a picture of what you're talking about, where it's like, hey, we have a tried and true way that we've done business, and this is exactly what's worked. We don't need to change anything because it's worked for the last 50 years. And I totally respect that. And if that continues to work for you, it's great. But what happens is you start to see attrition, right? So maybe whoever the buyer was at the previous company, he's moved to someplace else. So the new buyer's come in, he's got more comfort with another company, and he goes to see who you are as a company. He's like, well, they seem great or whatever, but this other company over here has more enhanced tools, and I got a better relationship with him, or they're doing a lot of educational stuff, or they come visit me in person, or whatever that may be. Well, eventually what's gonna happen is you're just gonna see a natural decline in your business. And really, as a business leader, you need to pretty much stay in tune with what's going on. And if you're seeing that your numbers are starting to dwindle, you got to start asking yourself why. And if you're not willing to take a look at the tried and true, this is the thing, way we've always done business kind of deal, the challenge, what's going to happen is that business will go away. I think it was Will Rogers that said, even if you're on the right track, you can get hit by a train if you're not going anywhere. And so you constantly have to be moving with that business. You gotta get, if you're not growing, you're dying. And so in some cases, that expectation is changing, the industry is changing, everything's growing with it. And up until, probably 10 years ago, you could have a website that you built one time and you never touched it again.
Right.
But with paid search, SEO, everything's changing. And there's an expectation that you're relevant with all those different things. I mean, the fact that you have a podcast is probably a little bit considered cutting edge right now, but in the grand scheme of things, it's education, it's networking, it's expanding your reach all across different platforms. You're going to be a part of my audience. I'm a part of your audience now. And so that network and that net's going to get a lot wider. And so when you have that in your toolbox, you're going to see yourself grow as a business, as opposed to if you didn't do that. Now, your tried and true business, you might have that steady growth, right? You're growing 5-10% every single year. You're happy with that. That's great. But every time, I've been in sales a long time, nobody wants to have steady growth. Everyone wants that hockey stick. It's like, whatever we did last year, that's not good enough for this year. So we got to figure out a way to grow it. And just doing the bare minimum is not going to hit that number. You can have a really good salesperson, like I like to think of myself as a really good salesperson, but I can be a great salesperson if I have really good effective marketing that's just, you know, going over the top. It's selling while I'm sleeping. Have you ever heard of the term a marketing ladder?
Tell me about that.
So marketing ladder is, think of it as education, right?
Okay.
So every rung of that ladder, every point of contact that you have with somebody, they're climbing closer and closer to a sale. So the most educated customer is going to come to you and say, I want to buy your system. You didn't have to sell them anything. It's because your marketing did all of that work.
Okay.
Now, in some cases, the salespeople get a lot of credit for it, right? Because if the marketing's doing its job, all of a sudden sales is closing a lot more and sales go, well, it's because we're great salespeople.
Sure.
Which probably they are, right? But they're,
it's a system.
Yeah, but what all they are is responsive. And yeah. what you have at that point is you really don't need a good salesperson. You just need an inside salesperson who can just take the call, take the order. But what is it? I'm just going to hit you with all sorts of quotes.
Yeah, hit me.
Awareness creates demand. And so the more aware that your customer is about what you do, the more you're educating them, they're climbing that ladder, and that gets you that much closer to a sale. To where now, your customers actually are talking about your stuff because they're like, man, check out this cool new thing, this new piece of equipment that they put in. We're using it, and it's revolutionizing what we're doing. You need to do that. That's still sales. That's still marketing. It's just referral. It's re-engagement. So all those different pieces combined can make a huge difference. If you're happy with where you're at, you know, my message isn't going to resonate with you. But if whenever your discontent gets to the point where you're like, you know what, I'm not happy that our business keeps shrinking and it's a slow, steady decline, it's probably because it's time to change. It's time to expand what you're currently doing and go a little bit bigger than you've, you know, currently done in the past. But that's the expectation now.
My times of greatest worry is when things are going well.
Yeah. Good is the enemy of great.
You know, and I'm always waiting for that other shoe to drop, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the paranoid survive and da da all that sort of stuff. But yeah. I find it, and this is, I think, common knowledge, but sometimes contextually speaking, it can be hard to say it to yourself or to oneself, which is, you know, I don't want to wait till there's a problem to react to my problem, you know? And that's, I think that's a lot of the job. And one thing I've commented on is, you know, over the years, people, as we've done Brizos, you know, we've talked to all kinds of people that are outside the industry that will be like, you know, metals industry does not adopt technology.
Yeah.
And I think this ties into marketing as well, which is when you're in this industry, I say they do adopt technology, but they're highly discerning about which technologies are adopted.
That's a great word.
And what I mean is that when I was in distribution, we had vendors of various things like software, like ERP systems or, you know, saws or profiling machines, all sorts of things that we had an opportunity to invest in.
Yeah.
And what it comes down to is dollar for dollar. So if you have a machine, like if you think about your business, it's like, I've got a dollar and I can make an investment. Mm-hmm. When I put that dollar in, how many can come out the other side?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's, you're trying to set up these operational machines that can just create return for your business. And I think one of the hurdles for marketing in the industry is that line between their investment and the return on that investment has not been drawn as brightly as the line that gets drawn between buying a new saw to increase capacity and more revenue or higher profitability.
Yeah.
So I think that it's a level of discernment of like, what's the highest and best use of this dollar? And, you know, I believe in marketing and, you know, and I think there's a right and wrong way to do it in different places.
Yeah.
And my experience was, you know, we do Google things and all that stuff. And I think you can almost say in certain contexts, those are necessary evils. And that's not the fun part of marketing.
Yeah.
That's the, like, you got to have those boxes checked part
Absolutely,
of marketing.
Yeah.
So are you finding that when you talk to companies that they are like, you know, we just feel like it's better to go invest in capacity or things like that.
Yeah.
And what is your opinion on, you know, the adoption of technology and supply chains? Do you think discerning is a fair thing, or do you feel like it's something different?
Yeah, well, what you're describing is a good problem to have, because if you have the ability to add capacity and increase your sales with that, then keep, you know, obviously invest that marketing dollar, because that means people already know about you. You've already got a demand that's really limited, limited by your capacity as opposed to the reach or the amount of customers you have. The only thing that I would say to that is, depending on how specialized you get or how limited the amount of customers you have, you also become very dependent on those customers. And so the challenge with that is if that customer goes away at some point, now you've heavily invested in equipment, now you've heavily invested in capacity, and you don't have a buyer anymore. So diversification is a big part of that. And so I think that's where the discernment would come in. It's like, okay, how great of a relationship do we have with our current business? And I mean, take COVID as an example, right? When COVID hit, there's industries that were drastically impacted by it that maybe survived because of diversification, or they had to diversify because of COVID, but they were behind the eight ball. And so, yes, if you have that capacity, you have that ability, by all means, yeah, invest those marketing dollars in that, but I would still always allocate some form of your budget towards marketing, because that's where your next sale is going to come from. That's where your diversification is going to come from. So marketing doesn't need to be like a massive spend in terms of what you do, especially if you have a very strategic use of that and you're discerning in what's going to be the best use of your marketing funds. If you have a good VP of marketing, marketing director, or somebody has that kind of experience, they can really help you, guide you through that. And then the beautiful thing about us is we're like a plug and play marketing department. So instead of you going and hiring somebody who's really good at SEO and paying them salary, paying taxes, paying benefits, and all they do is social media marketing or all they do is SEO, you could essentially use a third party company, kind of like what I'm sure you've heard of, like fractional roles, like fractional CMO or fractional COO. Use us as something like that, where it's like, hey, we have a campaign that we need to do. We have a new product that we're launching. Let's get that marketing out for that specific thing. And maybe you can take it over from there. Like if we redo your website, we can redo your website in such a way that you can maintain your website instead of me having to do every single thing for you. And so if you...
So that's really important stuff. And I think it's super relevant, because it's talking about the idea of, we just bought a new saw.
Yeah.
Great. How are people going to know?
Nobody's going to know about it. Yeah.
So then it brings me to another question, which is, you know, cost of our customer acquisition cost.
Yeah.
And then the lifetime value of that customer. Yeah. And that comes down to also with these companies that are thinking capacity and utilization capacity, are they seeking increased wallet share from existing customers? And they aren't necessarily talking about bringing on new customers. Mm. Because that is, for many businesses, there's nothing worse than making one sale to one customer,
right,
filling the leaking bucket.
Yeah, yeah.
And so is the capacity being brought on for these other value-add services and just to get more wallet share, in which case that salesperson could very easily just say, hey, I just want you to know we can also cut up to 24-inch OD or whatever like that. So I think that there's a lot in there as far as the discovery to me is so important.
Right, yeah.
Because as with all things, if you don't really understand the, I'm going to say problem, I don't know if it's a problem, but the impetus for you being there, if you can't really uncover that and say it in a sentence, then you shouldn't begin whatever is next.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But what you're talking about, I think, is really a great model for the industry, which is we want to flex up for a bit on marketing. We want to flex up and get our website. We want to get Google Analytics working correctly so we can target correctly and all that sort of stuff. So I love the model of what you guys have. I think it's really, and I think most times it'll lead to, hey, that was a good experience. How do we keep going?
Exactly.
And you know, what's the maintenance program look like? And that's when you say, that is not really, we're always have to be advancing. It's not maybe necessarily a maintenance program.
Right, right.
So what do you do as your group when you guys have done your job well and they're like, hey, we want to keep rolling. Is there the option of like, hey, we're going to set you up. We're going to help you find, basically headhunt, get you some people that you need. Mm-hmm. Or you can kind of, we're just going to stay in touch and keep going.
Yeah, so typically what happens, we'll do that pre-quote discovery on the front end, which is trying to uncover those objectives that you're trying to reach. And then we'll make recommendations on how we'll do that. historically speaking, we're going to first solve whatever your biggest need is, because that's going to get you the opportunity to work with us. That's going to get you in the door to where you're familiar with who we are, what we do. If I come in with everything, you're going to be like, all right, this is way more than I thought I wanted. I'm overwhelmed. I don't want to touch it now. So we don't want to necessarily do that, even though it's helpful to give you that full picture, and we'll do that if you want. But what we'll typically do is we'll basically say, all right, based on our conversation, based on the audience that you're trying to reach, the industries, all those different things, here's our recommendation what you should do. And then usually at the end of the quote, we'll make one or two additional future recommendations. And those are going to be like, hey, all right, this is phase one. Let's get all the way through. And then phase two, you should start considering these things. Typically, once we've gone all the way through the campaign, that's when the phase two conversation will happen. It's like, all right, do you want to keep doing this, or do you want to maybe add an additional piece to that? And that's going to help you take that next step to a full-blown marketing ecosystem. Mm-hmm. When you get that marketing ecosystem in place, the beautiful thing about that is it becomes predictable results. You go, I'm spending this amount of money, that dollar in, and what's the output? And CFOs love us because once we have that whole piece in place, through our analytics, through our performance optimization, and our reporting back to you, we actually hold ourselves accountable to your results. We'll actually go, okay, based on what we're seeing right now, you're at X in, Y out, but we're seeing a couple of different channels that are responding really well. And you're in control of your ad spend, so that could be your paid search, your paid keywords, your paid social, whatever. If we're seeing a trend that is responding well.
For people that are listening, when you're saying ad spend, you're talking about if a company wants to rank or come up as a first page result on a Google search or how they, so you guys put a plan into action, and it is a channel test, which is, okay, we're going to cast these five things out into the world, and we'll be on, we're going to optimize Google, and say, we want to come up when the user searches these words.
Exactly, yeah, okay, the keywords,
The keywords, and then you say, well, we're going to be on LinkedIn, we can do that stuff, great. Yeah. And so you've got the full scope, and then the other thing I'm thinking about, and something that is hard for the company that's hired marketing, one of the things that can be difficult is to get that company to carve out the time to make the marketing work. And for example, you said something like earlier, like thought leader.
Yeah.
So you could do, at the beginning, somebody who is, a lot of companies are probably maybe understaffed versus overstaffed.
Right.
And be like, hey, I really need you to even proofread what our ghostwriter wrote, or we need you to. So how do you get that done? Because that's a tough part, and I think it's really worth it to push that company through. Like, I know this is a new thing for you, but how do you work with that?
Yeah, so I feel like we're maybe touching a little close to home right now. So the important part about that is,
and you totally are. I mean, this is something that we've hired marketing companies and. In the past, and much of what's driving our marketing right now is we've integrated into our business.
Yeah.
Meaning that we have, our work environment is a marketing system.
Right.
So it's like, we can't carve out time to explicitly market.
Right.
So we, our office is cameras. It is a set.
Yeah.
And so we can constantly be creating content.
Right.
Because I was being asked to, hey, will you write this? Or will we do that? And I'm just like, I would love to, but competing priorities, isn't, and marketing gets the shaft a lot.
Yeah.
It just does. And it's too bad because you can, talk about real estate, something that everyone understands.
Yeah.
You can build the most kick-ass house you want, but if nobody knows about it.
Exactly.
You know, so how do you work, how might somebody like me who is doing what is really the right thing for my business, but doesn't, how do you get me to carve out the time?
Well,
is that part of your vetting process?
I charge you a lot of money. Now you feel like you have to spend the time doing it. No, I'm just kidding.
No, fair enough.
Some of that is like you basically identified right off the bat, hey, this is a priority. So I brought in a third party. It's kind of like hiring a trainer at the gym, right? You can go work out at the gym, but when you're paying somebody to do it, you can take it a little bit more seriously. The other thing I would do is, and this is kind of like a little bit of a hack, but if you got paid AI through ChatGPT, you can actually teach ChatGPT to create content for you. So you can say, hey, this is my voice, and this is what we talk about, and this is our products and everything else. You gotta be smart. Don't use the free version, because now you're essentially feeding AI. But if you have the ability to really contain it within your system, you can say, hey, I need to create a a short 2-minute video about this, and here's what I want to talk about. Knowing what you know about me, write that script. And so that can create some of the content, and then you basically spend a little bit of time tweaking it, personalizing it, making your own. And so you can, in some capacity, accelerate that process so you're not spending as much time in the creative part. The other side of that is hiring technical writers or hiring a creative director. And what they're going to do is they're going to specialize in that specific kind of industry, the knowledge base and whatever else. What I really like about us having an in-house creative director is I've been in situations where I'm like, we need to update our photos, or we want to do like a 2-minute brand video, and we just want to talk about our company. Well, if I just hire a videographer, he's going to come in and expect you to know what to say.
Right.
And so he's going to say, hey, you're the owner of the company.
Rolling tape.
Yeah, we're gonna start recording, and just do your thing. We'll edit it all together. Well, the creative director is going to approach that a little differently. The creative director is going to dig in. They're going to do the research. They're going to identify with you and uncover what are the hot points? What are the hot buttons? Like, what's the message that you really want to communicate? What's the parts of your system you want to highlight? What are the things that you want to show? And they're going to help craft that narrative. So they're going to tell you, all right, we're going to storyboard this out. This is what we're going to do. Before we even start recording, we're going to know exactly what we're going to capture.
Right.
And we're going to say, I want you to talk about this. And you'll go, okay, no problem. As opposed to start talking. And so
the post-production on that's a nightmare, by the way.
Exactly. So if you go in there with a plan and you have that creative director and that team on the front end that does a lot of that work for you, it doesn't become such a time suck for you, because you can basically say, all right, I'm just going to talk about these things. I already know what I'm going to talk about because we've already, you know, prioritized that. And so you're not dreading the interview. You just go in and go, okay, now I'm going to start talking about how my system's going to save you time. Now I'm going to start talking about, you know, how beautiful our system is and how easy it is to navigate. You're going to go into all those different things, and they're going to merge it all together and make it really flow and capture that within 2 minutes, because you get 45 minutes of content, I'm sure. But then how do you know what part to trim out and what to really, you know, hit on the high
points? So for those who are listening to this, like what would be like a litmus test for them to be like, yeah, we're probably good candidates for that? Like, okay, go look at your website.
Yeah.
You know, go look at your LinkedIn. Like, what are things they can evaluate themselves to be like, or is that just something they probably know it and...
You know, they probably already have people that know the answer to that, and they're the guys in the field. The guys in the field are the ones that are doing the actual interactions with the customer. They're the ones that know what the hot buttons are for the customer. They know what the needs are for the customer. And so a lot of times when I see like a sales and marketing team that works really well together, the marketing resonates with the customer. But when you have marketing over here and you have sales over here, marketing's doing what the brand wants. Sales is doing what's going to get them the actual sale.
Right.
So they're going to talk about this, and they're going to say, don't go to our website, because our website's not going to tell you what you need to know, and call me instead, right? And so when you have that disconnect, what's happening is your marketing's not helping your sales team, and your sales team doesn't want to use your marketing because your marketing's not speaking to the problem that's actually resonating with the customer.
Can I fairly say that you need to have your air support supporting where the ground is.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. If you're doing air support and your team's over here, that's not doing you any good.
Right. So that's sort of like, you know, people love selling, you know, from St. Louis, people love selling Anheuser-Busch because they know that during the football games, you know, there's going to be 12 Bud Light commercials or Budweiser, whatever commercials. So like, yeah, we're getting all that air support.
Yeah.
We'll definitely sell that.
Yeah.
Because people are going to come in and buy it.
Right.
And the other thing I was thinking about as you're talking about that, is I'm gonna change gears slightly on you, which is, and I don't do this very often on our podcast, but you are so attuned to it that I've got to bring it up, which is we just released our new release,
right?
Which is called Gone in 60 Seconds.
Okay.
2.0.
Got it.
Okay, and you walked up, and you're one of the few people are often focused on functionality, which is typically job one.
Right.
Like you can't have a fancy car that doesn't start.
Right.
You know, but you walked up and immediately started commenting on the styling of that. And I wanted to know what caught you about it.
Oh, okay. Well, I think part of it is in marketing specifically. And these are just things that I notice. I'll see really technical companies, when it comes to a website, really, or applications, really technical applications that actually work really, really well, but they're not intuitive. And I'll see the other side, applications that are designed really well, but they don't work. And so when you find somebody, specifically for me, I built an internal system at one of my old companies, and my designer was actually good at both. And what I found was over time that was a rarity. That's not somebody who's creative and technical. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I see something like that where it merges together and there's it's intuitive, it's the litmus test for me is if my mom could use it,
yes,
then I believe anybody can use it. So you really have it to where they're naturally going, like Apple does a great job of, right? Like natural motions and natural things are the gestures that they integrate into the technology. And it's a design, it's a forethought, it's digging a little deeper. You told me that your website or your application is built around like an email browser because that's what people are used to.
Yes.
So when I saw that, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense because it has a natural flow out of stair steps in terms of where the menus are and where you're getting your information, where your eye naturally goes. And so once somebody gets that and they're able to use it easily and quickly, well, guess what? Implementation and acceptance of that application is going to go through the roof. And instead of them doing a trial with you, that's going to become the predominant technology in their actual company, as opposed to, well, it's a nice technology, it looks great, but it doesn't really work. So let's just go back to our old system because I know that our old system works and I really don't have a ton of time. I used to work with some other companies in the past, and they would recognize that my product was better, but they wouldn't implement it because it was going to take too much time. So if you can shorten that gap, and specifically for the decision maker, they can see that it's intuitive and the implementation won't take that long, they're more likely to say yes. Instead of, I might be losing business because I'm not able to quote jobs because I got to train everybody to use your system.
Right.
And so if you can really demonstrate that through the education, through the actual demos that you do here, then a business decision maker will go, that's an easy switch for us. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
With the goal, the intent was a demo-less app.
Yeah.
Right? Which is that anybody who spends any time in any sort of email client should be like, oh, left to right. Got it.
Right.
Not a big deal. Right. And what you just said about, oh, we're losing sales because of the system we've integrated. You know, I've been a party to ERP implementations in the past. What you said is absolutely real.
Right.
Because the ERPs of the past, you know, whenever you created these systems, you've got to walk the fence line between rigid and flexible.
Right.
How easily can you overwrite a part number?
Yeah.
Or do you have to go have a new one put in the library?
Right.
So a salesperson might be in favor of, I just want to overwrite the part number and just make the sale versus like, all right, time out. I got to go back to the, you know, IT department, whatever, and have this part number put in,
right,
and they're just clicking their mouse constantly, and they feel like they're losing out.
Yeah.
And so that's a real thing. And I don't, part of also what our goal has been is this idea that the metals industry supply chains are kind of rusty, dusty, as I say.
Yeah.
And there's this real issue, which is, the retainment of talent, mm-hmm, or just attracting talent into these industries. And I remember I said, I was like, I want to create a piece of software that is so kick-ass that people are leaving their current industry because they just heard about what was being created over in the metals industry.
Nice. Yeah.
Because if you pair that up with, okay, we're in this hall, I see robotic arms, I see shit everywhere that's like highly technical.
Yeah.
But what's the interface to the industry look like?
Yeah, and it's on like dot matrix printers, and you're just sitting there going, I can't believe they're still running their business on there. But for them, it works, right? But then they got all these patches and cables, and they're like, at some point, our technology becomes so antiquated that we actually might go out of business. So there will be a point where it does naturally shift. But if you can create an environment where they go, okay, I can see where I can implement this quickly. They're more quickly to adopt. And then you add value on top of that, right? I'm saving you money. I'm saving you time, doing all those other things. It's that marketing ladder. You get that much closer to a yes.
All right. So let me ask you in closing a couple of questions. And just as best as you can, Evan, which is, repeat for us again, kind of the buffet or menu items for your company. I want you to say your company name again.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know how people can find you.
Yeah. So Leadline Marketing, it's just leadlinemarketing.com. Think of us as a full service ad agency, but that's website design, paid search, SEO, video, photography, content creation, business analytics on the front end, business analysis. What I really want you to walk away with is performance marketing. You want marketing that's going to perform for you, it's going to get you to the objectives that you want, and you want a company that's going to partner with you, that's going to optimize that along the way, and it's going to be in such a way that your decision makers all the way to your sales team understand the who, the why, the what's happening, where those marketing dollars are going, and the return that's happening from that. So that's what we do. It ties into everything that we're talking about here today because, again, it's business people talking to business people. They need to understand the marketing that's out there, the opportunity that they have, and the lifetime value of that customer. Because I'll say to some people, like, hey, I'm not going to be the cheapest guy. I'm not going to be the most expensive guy. But I will ask you to spend a decent amount of money. But if that decent amount of money, if you know that the return is going to be much greater than the amount that you put in, a CFO is going to go, yeah, let's do that. Because I've seen the marketing ecosystem work. I understand how it goes. And as we're able to build that with you, you're going to get to the point where it's like, all right, we can really set the pace of what we want to grow. And as a direct or indirect result of that, I get to grow as a company too. And I get to see the success with you. We get to be more successful. I get to hire more people. We get to create more jobs. Man, it's all the different pieces that makes America great.
It's like, wouldn't it be great to not to think about marketing?
It would be fantastic, yeah.
Well, it's kind of like the idea of if you might think we're expensive, wait till you add up the cost of using someone else.
Yeah, it's the opportunity cost for sure, yeah.
So, anyway, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. It's good catching up.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.